things that happen out on the roads, on the water, in the air, every day that machines, again, cannot really anticipate. When things happen, they can't really reconcile or intervene. So when we look at just that planning horizon, just seeing what opportunities are available to the end user that's sitting there going, my scope of vision is just limited to what I've been trained to know. And when you really zoom out at that 30, 40,000 foot level and see at a network-wide level how machines and mathematical modeling can really come into play and expose all the opportunities you never really knew that were existing.
Budget overruns, brick devices, data breaches, building connected products is hard. Welcome to Over the Air, sharp, unfiltered conversations with executives about their IoT journeys, the mistakes they made, the lessons they learned, and what they wish they'd known when they started. I'm your host, Ryan Prosser.
Welcome back to Over the Air, IoT connected devices and the journey. My name is Ryan Prosser, CEO of Veri, and today we're joined by Chris Torrance. We're going to be talking about AI as friend, not foe. Chris, thanks for being on the show.
Appreciate it, Ryan. Glad to be here, man.
So Chris, you're Chief Strategy Officer at Optum. For folks that don't know, give us 30 seconds on what you guys do.
Yeah, Optum is a cloud-based SaaS solutions platform that specializes in optimization, and there's an AI component, which I know we'll talk about today. Our domain is particularly within the supply chain umbrella, specifically within logistics, and even within a subset of that is in trucking. So we've been around since about 2000. We got our initial start in the rail, mining, airline, and LTL space, and my background's in the full truckload space. So we feel like we've hardened the product enough over the 20 years of trial and error to really make a big impression into the truckload space. And we're our founder, a guy named Ravi Ahuja, was a professor at MIT, IIT in India, and University of Florida. So a lot of this has just been IP in his head that we've productized, and we're just seeing a huge level of traction around optimization and AI, of course, in every space, and logistics is no different.
Amazing. Wow. An AI company around since 2000. Talk about OG. So talk about AI and trucking. What's you guys' take? What are you excited about? What's your place in that space?
Again, with LinkedIn can probably tell you a lot of my background, but I've had the privilege of working at some pretty cool, successful startups in our space. And again, supply chain logistics focused. I think what's cool is this evolution of technologies really started to open up a lot of new doors and capabilities that didn't exist, as you alluded to, when we started as an OG back in 2000, right? So with that said, I think there's a huge amount of opportunity to leverage mathematical modeling, optimization, other AI components, machine learning, all the buzzwords that we hear. But what I've learned personally, Ryan, and what I think Optum's philosophy is, as you said at the beginning of the show, it's, you know, a lot of companies, they're very, it's polarizing. You're very pro-tech, automation, everything. And then there's legacy, more traditional companies that, let's be honest, tech hasn't always followed through on delivering those promises made around AI and autonomous, et cetera, right? So we've taken a philosophy at Optum of, hey, we're here to harmonize and balance out the best of human-to-human interaction, knowing we're not going to replace humans with machines for many years to come, especially in a space as nuanced and that deals with the physical world like trucking and logistics. But we do realize in parallel that there are absolutely opportunities to leverage advanced machines. As I say often, I use a calculator every day. I rarely have a good conversation with the chatbot. So as an analogy, we kind of try to bridge that gap. How do we leverage and maximize the best of both? And I think that's going to be a trend that's going to really starting to resonate really within the probably every space. But again, trucking and logistics certainly being kind of a more antiquated, traditionally viewed as. That's something that is, you know, we're able to kind of really incrementally show value over time by not overstepping our boundary of what machines are capable of doing.
It's interesting. And one of the things that I find also very interesting about your company, we hear a lot about self-driving. We hear a lot about AI replacing people. I think, you know, someone could be forgiven at this point in the episode for maybe assuming that you guys are very excited to replace truckers and have this driverless future, but that actually is not what you guys are really excited about. This is more AI to augment and support truckers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, and again, we'll delineate between the use cases, right? So autonomous trucks, which I had the honor of kind of being a part of that during my time at Uber, and when we thought we'd have, you know, fully L4, L5 autonomous trucks, obviously the amount of capital to support that has been tremendous. And we've seen a little turbulence in that space as of late. And I think a lot of it goes back into what I said, you know, around the physical world is so uncertain, right? And you're talking about moving 80,000 pound missiles across the road. There's a level of public trust. There's regulatory and legislative hurdles that still need to be overcome. So although there are some amazing players in that space, and I do believe whether it's on the POV, personal vehicles, and semi-trucks, like in due time, I think that's exciting to think about. But when does it proliferate at true scale, right? I think there's a lot of uncertainty around the technology itself that's being utilized on autonomous. So Optum has kind of said, hey, you guys focus on that. That's a major problem. We're a software company, right? We're not a capital intensive company. It's our tech stack and our people. So we've taken the approach of like at the operator level, right? So there is a driver component, especially in the owner operator community, as they call it, as well as these big private fleets and dedicated carriers, for hire carriers. We're kind of like, there's someone that has to coordinate and orchestrate all that in the background. That's where Optum tends to play, right? We like to sit there at that dispatcher, that operator level, the planner level, and be that virtual assistant of sorts that helps them make better decisions. And that's really what we're talking about, Ryan, is how do we leverage, again, the best of the mathematics behind what we're doing? And it's a ton of math, right? It really is. But again, making sure that that nuance and tribal knowledge that often is the biggest competitor of SaaS companies like ours is that information in Ryan's head, that he's an expert and he's never really systematically uploaded into any kind of software for supply chain companies to really be able to leverage that knowledge because it's still in your head. So it's going to take a lot of time and trial and error, and it's an infinite process. I don't know that it ever ends just due to the nature of the business we play in. But again, the exciting part is seeing the traction we're getting from the end user and the executive level, seeing the potential and not viewing again as a threat and a pink slip that's coming as more of an augmentation, as you said. That's probably the best word to use because it's going to take time to really learn the extreme amount of complexities that we deal with every day. So, you know, when you talk about Optum again, less autonomous focused, at that point in time, when that's at scale, right, it is a true math problem because you're taking the human out of the equation, theoretically. But for us, we look at it as that's still a very distant endeavor and it's going to take a lot of time. So we can all agree that the human serves a purpose. They're not going anywhere for a while. I think Optum, again, in terms of a commercial approach, that seems to resonate. And it's true. It's very authentic in how we believe. And so, again, we're seeing a lot of the market say, hey, we're great to finally see a vendor that realizes that and fundamentally believes in that. And so that's from someone who kind of leads strategy in the commercial side, that's gaining a lot of traction. It's not an either or, like I said, it's how do we blend that the best of both?
So Chris, follow up on that. You're talking about augment, you're talking about supporting drivers. I like it. It makes sense. It's very different than I think a lot of what we've heard on this show where it feels more distant future, you know, and I'm like, I don't know that we're ready for driverless trucks cruising around, like you said, with missiles and fuel and Beanie Babies. Talking about augmenting drivers, adding value. Give us a couple of like the coolest use cases, the highest value use cases that you guys are really pumped about. You hear from your users, they're really pumped about.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you break it down, there's planning horizons that we typically focus in on. And then there's the only way to validate those plans in an offline scenario is through an operational execution tool. So that would be in the trucking world, it's the dispatching, the driver to load assignment, things of that nature, right? And again, I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of math in that. So what's cool is we can calculate through an optimization button of sorts what would be deemed as an output that would say, hey, the human brain has a certain limitation on the amount of permutations and calculations that there are. And I often tell people, you know, from an analogy perspective, managing a logistics network is effectively like playing 1,000 games of chess all at the same time, and then introducing the volatility and variability of the physical world, things that happen out on the roads, on the water, in the air, every day that machines, again, cannot really anticipate. When things happen, they can't really reconcile or intervene. So when we look at just that planning horizon, just seeing what opportunities are available to the end user that's sitting there going, my scope of vision is just limited to what I've been trained to know. And when you really zoom out at that 30, 40,000 foot level and see at a network wide level, how machines and mathematical modeling can really come into play and expose all the opportunities you never really knew that were existing. So in trucking, one of the cool things is we're seeing a trend now with the over the road that was often romanticized as true Americana. I want to be a driver and get out on the open road. Well, as you can imagine, it's a tough lifestyle, right? And so I think a lot of this is how do we realize that if we're going to have a generation that's coming into trucking logistics that doesn't want to be gone from their family and missing things in life on the road for weeks on end, and the new generation saying, hey, we don't mind driving, but we want to be home with our family just as much as Ryan or Chris. So a lot of the cool things we're doing is converting networks that have been traditionally looked at as over the road and playing these kind of war games on what if you're able to get those drivers home 2 or 3x more often, what does that do to your network? What are those KPI and metrics? How does that look? You can do that in an offline environment without having to push this into production and realizing it doesn't work, which often happens. Somebody's head rolls, right? And the skepticism just builds from there. The other aspect is the operational. So if you have this cool offline historical data stuff that you're working with, well, the buyer and the community and the operator is going to go, great, It's about trust, though. Do I trust that your outputs and your recommendations through optimization are accurate? And the only way to do that is validate that. So what we do is we take the offline plans and then we can push it into an operational environment. And again, incrementally over time, that end user goes, you know, I just made a better decision that was more profitable for my network. And it also satisfies my driver. It also met the utilization metrics that we all need, because we're talking about trucking companies, a lot of capital, right? Razor thin margins, high CapEx. How do we kind of make sure that they're making the best decision and supporting those decisions through empirical data that backs that up? Again, there's planning, there's tactical use cases, and then there's real-time operational use cases. And again, we're talking about putting trillions of possible permutations and parameters that come into play and saying, how do we make the best of that? Now, again, that's in theory, some of this sounds great, but then you get into that, what I said earlier, that nuance. So a user will say, yeah, Ryan, I know this sounds good, but the reality is, like, I've lived this every day and I can tell you here's a variable or a piece of nuance you didn't know that existed. So we're going in there and kind of having that feedback loop through voice of customer, through reinforcement learning that enables the systems, the machines to get better and better and better through a series of bonuses and penalties. And that's where we really start to see the magic happen when those end users start to go, not only do I believe in it more than ever, you've just made my job easier, right? So I have time, like I said earlier, I can now just hit the optimize button, checking to make sure everything works out, building trust over time incrementally. And over time, they're getting all this time back on their day to focus on things that, again, machines can't do, which is have conversations, talk to my drivers. They're lonely. How do I ensure that my drivers are staying happy? How do I retain drivers once I've hired them? There's a cost to that. So I think, again, going back to optimization, it means a lot of things. You can't have your cake and eat it too. We know that. So when we work with organizations, we're going, are you willing to offset X, Y, and Z variables to gain on whatever that KPI you're really deeming as the most optimal for your business? So a lot of moving parts there, Ryan. And again, we could talk about this for hours, but that's the high level kind of overview of, I think, what our go-to-market strategy is.
Let's talk about technical challenges related to those. You know, so we talk on the show a lot about wrong side of impossible, you know, the idea that a tech company to exist has to solve a hard technical problem that wasn't solved before, sometimes at a different price point. What does that look like for you guys through the lens of what you were just describing? What were some of the difficult things that you guys needed to solve for? And can you walk us through a little bit how you did go about solving them?
One that comes to mind is something I've seen throughout my career. It's that integration piece, right? Because it is an ecosystem. There's no singular player that can dominate, or we wouldn't be having these conversations, right? There'd be that one player. And there are a few that have that level of scale that you still always view as a threat, right? In any company capacity. In our industry, right, there's just traditionally, it's a little further behind than, say, other spaces. So when you talk about the need to get data, right, the garbage in, garbage out, the access and accuracy of data in our space is very difficult. And we're dealing with new tech vendors on, you know, working on cloud and APIs, right, really evolved. But we're also, like, their trading partners might be on a much, you know, a legacy system that doesn't have that infrastructure, the foundational level of support. So no matter how cool your technology is, if you can't integrate that technology correctly, then, like, the data that you need, the feed, the source, it's really going to limit the value that you can bring. So what we've also done at Optum is, in our space, a lot of the massive data lake would be stored in what we call a TMS, a transportation management system. Think of that as similar to an ERP or any other major systems in place that house a lot of data. So Optum, years ago, built a TMS. And what we've done is built an optimization layer over that, which resides in the same unified platform. So what we've done, Ryan, is, you know, with our go-to-market strategy, we're saying, hey, we'll still be agnostic. We'll be Switzerland for companies that have invested in these systems, these TMSs, as I mentioned, that don't want to rip and replace. Great. We can just be complementary to what you already have. But there's a lot of companies out there that are just, they're working on legacy tools, like I said, and they're like, hey, if you can avoid the need for us to go through those really painful, timely, costly, messy integrations through EDI and, you know, CSV, flat files, platform. There's a myriad of different ways to integrate. But if we can kind of reduce that pain, if not eliminate it, through having that data stored in a singular platform that allows the decision support and optimization piece to reside in the same system, like, that's powerful. Again, that's something we're seeing across the market of companies saying, if we can unify that into a singular place, that single pane of glass for those two primary functions, that's a major win. So we look at that as, again, a lot of traction we're seeing from that particular unification of those systems.
And then paint us a picture of the future. I mean, so you guys have been in the future for 23 years now. Talk through roadmap a little bit. You know, the AI is finally here. You guys have been there for a long time. The world has just caught up. What's next for Optum?
We have roadmap, just like any IT, proper IT org and structure. So we absolutely see, as the more data we get, the pipes get cleaner, the leverage of APIs to make these, you know, if customers want to migrate, it makes that process much less painful. So we see really, Ryan, it's less about pie in the sky visions. Our industry, we know, is just the adoption rate takes time. So really our strategy is like, hey, let's not go out and start trying to sell futuristic moonshots before our industry and our core customer base and partners have said, you've hardened this product to a point where we've gained enough scale and traction, trust, user adoption. And that's going to take us some time. We know that fundamentally. And I've worked at a lot of companies that call it a half-baked, semi-baked product that they're already marketing. And then they start trying to sell the roadmap items. And that's where things tend to fall short because your customers are going, hey, we already bought your core solution. We're trying to figure out ROI. How do we measure that, right? Before we're willing to buy anything else. So for the short term, that's going to be our strategy. Harden it, build out customer base. And with all that, as we scale, right, that's more data to work with. So with these things in the future, not going down the path of too much into our domain, but you look at these future scenarios where you can take all of that data and you can start to really do some cool things in trucking where you can decouple the trailer from the tractor unit and the driver, you know, and have them as singular, very granular level variables that we can then start looking at some cool matching patterns that how do we really get efficient? We decouple and we look at these broad marketplaces that enable this matching component to take place. It is not going to happen for some time. And again, I mentioned our industry has a just inherent lack of trust with any provider. So again, how do you build that, right? And for us to go that path, we have to realize we can't take an approach of where we're a data aggregator and then we monetize and create additional revenue streams because we're partners that believed in your cause now look at you as a threat. So that's a tight line to walk right there. We see a lot of future opportunities and our industry folks are working on many of the same problems. But for us, our core belief is let's just harden what we have today and then start working on the future opportunities. So they're on the roadmap, but we're not going to go jam it down customers' throats that are still, you know, gradually and incrementally getting used to the software they've already purchased. That's something I believed in after seeing it for 20 years of projects often failing because of that mentality is getting too far ahead of the game versus reality.
And last question for you. I'll always love to close with this one. You guys have been at the forefront of AI for a while now, a couple decades. I mean, we don't get companies like that on the show often. AI is sort of a Johnny come lately for a lot of folks. You personally, Chris Torrence, have been around IoT for a while, seen a lot. Who's doing good work in B2B IoT that you think not enough people are talking about?
It's a gradual process. And we talk about the data use cases, right? So in my previous life or two, you know, this idea around visibility. If I can't see things, then it's really hard for me to make any decisions if I can't even see what's going on my own network, right? So why can I go on Amazon and order a package and see the evolution of that, see it come to my door, Uber, right? We all use Uber. You can see the vehicle. Why can't you do that in the commercial freight, the B2B space, right? So I think that there's companies out there 5-7 years ago that had done some cool, the genesis of what IoT and sensors would be at visibility, tracking things down as in trucking, there's an ELD, electronic logging device that sits on board. It's a federal mandate that produces telematics data. And one of the big use cases early on was visibility. What's cool is that was still limited to the asset. And there's companies, there's one up in Boston, a friend of mine named Krenar Kamani started a company called Tive, T-I-V-E. And they are looking at, well, if you really want to get granular on tracking and tracing and visibility, you got to go beyond just the back of a tractor trailer or a steamship that's lots of freight. Customers want to see, I want to get down to that pallet level, that skid level, maybe that SKU level. So we're seeing companies like Tive. And again, there's others, right? The telecoms, the Verizon Connects, they own the airwaves, right? That's a lot of data for them. So they're obviously going to be involved. But how do we use IoT and sensors down at a much more granular level that can not only produce visibility, but also any variability in temperature, any, you know, trucks move around, product shifts, and it gets, you know, there's a rejection or some kind of damage to the product, a claim gets filed. The more data we can collect in real time through IoT and sensor devices, certainly something that's, you know, everybody's going to win on that. And then companies like Optum kind of take the baton from there and go, we got visibility in real time. How do we then take that to the next level and start making better decisions based on that visibility data we have? So that's one use case. I'm never going to rule out the capabilities of a Google or a Microsoft, right? That are all working on very similar problems, even within the supply chain realm. But when I look at niche providers, Tive, one that just comes to mind because I just had a chat with this guy, Krenar, the other day, and it's really cool to see what they're doing. But it will take a village. It takes an ecosystem for all this to really work properly.
It does take a village. Chris Torrence, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Brian, yeah, thanks, man. Great meeting you and Riley, and appreciate the time. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening. Join us next time as we meet with another executive and talk about things that went wrong on a journey that went right.
Over the Air is brought to you by Very. To find out more about us, head over to verypossible.com. And make sure to search for Over the Air in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else great podcasts are found. Don't forget to click subscribe to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Very, thanks for listening.